So Barbara O'Neill, what can I say? You've all heard her speak on YouTube, probably, and she's someone who loves the Lord. She is actually a Seventh-day Adventist, which is this church. And we are sort of famous for health and for the Blue Zones. How many, have you ever heard of the Blue Zones, any of you? Yeah, a few of you have. Yeah, Loma Linda is one of the Blue Zones. All the other Blue Zones are these really pristine, like, beautiful places. And then there's Loma Linda. It's like, why? But it's amazing. And a lot of Seventh-day Adventists are vegetarian. We do have some other programs. We have an herbalist coming next week. So those of you that are local, check that out on the upcoming seminars. What else? We have depression recovery coming up, diabetes undone. Type 2 diabetes can be beaten, by the way. And so lots of cool stuff coming up. All right, well, back to Barbara. She loves helping people with their health and believes this, that if all would seek to become intelligent in regard to their bodily necessities, sickness would be rare instead of common. Wouldn't that be great? Imagine that. Sickness rare instead of common. I think it can happen. Well, as a pastor, I believe it's appropriate for me to have a word of prayer at this time. So if you would want to bow your heads with me, please. God in heaven, we thank you that it is your desire that our soul prospers, even as our health prospers. So please be here tonight in a special way. There's going to be so much information, so please help us to understand and retain that which is essential for each one of us to help our own health and to be a blessing to others. And we thank you in advance for blessing Barbara and teaching through her in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you so much. We'll see you at the break.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you and welcome. And I know that you're here because you're interested in getting the most out of your body. And as you'll see today, as you'll see in many of my lectures as we go through the week, that our human body was designed to heal itself. And so the million-dollar question is, well, if it's been designed to heal, why are so many people sick? Because I don't think there's a home that doesn't have some sort of sickness in it. And unfortunately today, in medicine, that we're told it's either the germ or the genes or it's just you, but none of that makes any sense. There's always a reason. And I was very happy to see that they have one of my favourite health books out there, The Ministry of Healing. And even though it was written a very long time ago, it's very appropriate for today because our bodies are the same. And there's a chapter in there called The Physician, The Educator. Did you know that's what physician means, educator? And unfortunately, because of the medical systems today, the doctor cannot spend very long with you. But I believe we all should be our own doctors. And part of being your own doctor is documenting your case. We are what we are because of, yes, some of our genes. Yes, also our birth. Yes, our childhood. All the things that have happened to us in our life come together to make us what we are. And the fact that there's always a reason means we need to investigate. And to know why a certain thing's happening in our body, looking at our history can give some idea. In case of sickness, the first thing that should be ascertained is the cause. But there's so much information out there and so many people are so confused. But what I like to do is bring people back to basics, back to the simplicity of the body and its incredible ability to heal itself when it's given the right conditions. The title of our class tonight is called Diabetes and Weight Loss. So why are so many people overweight? And why are so many people coming down with diabetes? There is a reason. Newton's third law of motion states that to every action there's an equal and an opposite reaction. In other words, there's always a cause. And Proverbs 26, verse 2 states that the curse causeless shall not come. Do you know what that means? No diabetes, no obesity, no overweight happens without a cause. There is always a reason. So what are the causes? I'd actually like to have a look tonight at some of the main causes. And it's got a lot to do with what we're eating. Now, always, in every country, there's been carbohydrate as part of the traditional diet. But it seems today that we've taken all the different carbohydrates from all the different cultures and put them all together. Because never in the history of mankind have human beings eaten so many carbohydrates. And I don't think anyone planned to eat that way. I think it just is easy. It's just there. So I'd like to have a look at these carbohydrates. I'd like to have a look at what they are. And I'd like to assess the effect that they're having. And in doing this, we start to get some of the reasons why diabetes and also obesity is so big today. I think there's probably cereal has become one of the most popular breakfasts. Or bread, that's a very popular one, and you know they are because there's whole aisles devoted to them in the supermarket, and they don't take you very far. And so cakes, biscuits, cookies, pretzels, donuts, we'll just say etc. because there's a lot of them. Also pizza. I'm a fifth generation Australian, Scottish descent. I didn't know what pizza was till I was about 25. But I don't think there's a child today that doesn't know what a pizza is. And pasta. I didn't know what pasta was, but I don't think there's a home today that doesn't have pasta in it. Also rice. Rice is another carbohydrate. Potatoes. I'm married to an Irishman, so every main meal must have potatoes. And last and certainly least in nutritive value is the pure crystallized acid that's extracted from the sugarcane plant. So you see what I'm saying here? We've got potatoes from Ireland, we've got rice from Asia, we've got the pizza and the pasta from Italy, and I guess cakes are spread all through the, and cereal and bread. Can you see that we've seem to have taken the carbohydrates from all these different cultures, put them all together, and it's become almost the main part of the food, especially with vegetarians. And what I want to do is I want to show you what happens to this food in our body. They all break down to a singular structure called glucose. And glucose gets absorbed into the blood, taken on the M1 main highway straight to the liver. And the liver, as the project manager, determines where this glucose goes. And the first place it is sent is to the cell. So let's go inside the cell. I call the inside workings of the cell the central business district of the human body. And if you want to know how the body heals, we need to know how it works. And to know how it works, we go to the CBD, we go inside the cell. We have 100 trillion cells in the body, and 75 trillion basically run the way I'm going to show you right now. So what's the other 25 trillion? The other 25 trillion are the red blood cells. Now, the blood is the carrier of nutrients to the cell, carrier of the water to the cell, carrier of the oxygen to the cell, and also the carrier away of waste from the cell. That's why the Bible calls the blood in Leviticus 17:11 that the blood is the life of the flesh, because it's bringing life to every cell. So the glucose comes to the cell wall. And there's a hormone called insulin that acts like the key to unlock the door to get the glucose into the cell. So before we have a look at what happens when the glucose goes into the cell, we're going to stop for a moment and have a look at the organ called the pancreas, which lives approximately central and to the left of our body, underneath the ribs, the pancreas. And the pancreas is the organ that releases the two hormones that balance blood glucose levels. One is insulin, and the role of insulin is to get the blood sugar levels down. And the other hormone is glucagon, and glucagon is the hormone that gets the blood sugar levels up again. So these two hormones act together to maintain blood sugar levels. So the glucose comes into the cell under the action of insulin. You see, getting blood sugar levels down, all of these foods go in, it causes glucose to go high. And so the brain says, quick, quick pancreas, release insulin, get it out of the blood and into the cell. Now when it gets into the cell, it goes through a 20-step pathway. And that 20-step pathway gives us 2 units of energy. Isn't that why we eat? To give us energy. So that the eyes see, the ears hear, the brain works, the body moves. The end result of the 20-step pathway is a chemical form of glucose called pyruvate. And pyruvate, as the chemical form of glucose, gets fed into the 8-step pathway. This 8-step pathway is often called the powerhouse of the cell because it delivers 36 units of energy. How come a 20-step pathway only gives us 2 and an 8-step pathway gives us 36? The difference is oxygen. This pathway, no oxygen. As we go through our classes this week, we'll be exploring that a little bit more in different areas. So this is the first place that the glucose gets sent, is down the energy pathways. But there's still a lot of glucose left over. And so now it gets stored as glycogen. What's glycogen? Glycogen is a name given to quick-release glucose stores. And these glycogen are little molecules of glucose. Little molecules of glucose just sitting in the muscle cell waiting to be used. Quick-release glucose stores. That's why you don't need to eat before you do your morning exercise. Because if you eat before you do your morning exercise, then you're going to have a war between the muscles that are trying to work and the stomachs that are trying to digest. No, just make sure you have adequate water, because water helps release these little molecules of glucose. You don't need to eat before you exercise, because as you move, you've got stores. This is already in your muscle cell, just waiting to be used. So when you start moving the body and it needs the glucose, it plucks it down the pathway, plucks it down the pathway. The liver also can store glycogen, and glycogen in the liver can be sent all through the body. So when our brain needs it, it'll get it from the liver, because when it's in the muscle cell, it can only be used by the muscle cell. But only so much glycogen can be stored. And we've still got a lot of glucose left over. And so now the body stores it in the most amazing fuel depot in the body. It's called fat. And in America, in Australia, on this high carbohydrate diet, what's happening? They're getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. From what I've shown you, which is basic science, you can see that fat doesn't make you fat. What makes you fat? It's this high carbohydrate diet releasing high glucose, and the body can't do anything else with it but has to store it. Now, the person that made this fact famous was Dr. Robert Atkins. You see, Dr. Robert Atkins was putting on weight. He theorized that if he stopped all the carbohydrates, his body would start living on his fat stores and he'd lose weight. And guess what? It worked. It worked. How did he get energy? Well, the liver can convert stored glucose back to glucose, fat, back to glucose, if it needs it. It's called gluconeogenesis. And what he did was he had lots of fiber, which most people don't realize. His patients had to eat 3 cups of vegetables a day, because he knew if it was just meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs, the colon would stop. His patients also had a lot of protein, meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. And fat, meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. So the weight just fell off him because he wasn't giving his body this quick-release glucose. And so the fat cells started to get broken up to give that glucose. He was never hungry because the liver can convert protein and fat to glucose if it needs it, and again, break down the fat stores to glucose. He was never hungry. Isn't that the perfect weight loss diet? If you want to lose weight, you've got to prevent hunger. How do you prevent hunger? You have breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and then you don't need to eat much at night, and sometimes the queen eats as much as the king. And what Atkins found, yes, people were losing weight, but you know what he also found? His diabetics were coming off their medication, type 1 and type 2. We find this too. He scratched his head. People with high cholesterol levels were coming back to normal. And what are we told? If you've got high cholesterol, stop the meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. Is that right? And Atkins is scratching his head. He didn't do it for that. He only did it for weight loss. So he went into the medical journals to find out if anyone had done research on this crazy diet that he put together. And he found that back in the 1980s, there'd been research with it. In fact, it goes back to even the late 1800s that people were playing with this. What he found was that these are the three essential food groups. You know what essential means? Body cannot make it. You've got to put it in. And he also discovered that the non-essential food group, and this is a surprise to most people, the non-essential food group is carbohydrates. And how many people today are overdoing the non-essential and missing out on the three essentials? So why are these essential? Fiber slowly releases the glucose, resulting in a better blood sugar level stabilization. Protein, 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is protein. And after the break, we're going to look at the DNA and you'll see that the new cells are built up by amino acids, which comes from the protein when we eat. You cannot function without protein. You cannot hear without protein. Our neurotransmitters in our brain are made from amino acids from the protein we eat. It's an essential nutrient. Fat is an essential nutrient. And what have we been told for the last 30 years? Stop the fat. It'll cause heart disease. Wrong. Are you starting to see that we got spun a lie on the fat? Fat is actually an essential nutrient. 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is fat, except for the brain cell. It's 70% fat. And the brain cell does not work well unless it's getting enough fat. Now, there are fats that kill and there are fats that heal. And when we look at heart tomorrow night, I'll be defining that in a little bit more detail. But really, fat is that comes from the hand of the Creator, the nuts, the seeds, the avocados, the coconuts. And the two oils that have stood the test of time is olive oil and coconut oil. In fact, we were told that coconut oil causes heart disease. Is that right, saturated fat? Well, the South Pacific Islanders have been eating it for thousands of years. And heart disease and diabetes only arrived when white man arrived. Got that? It's not rocket science. 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is fat. So these two are essential nutrients. But aren't I talking about meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs? Can you do it on a plant-based diet? You can. We're going to go to Genesis 1:29 and we're going to look at what God told Adam and Eve to eat. and we're going to have a look at the food, we're going to have a look at the protein content, and we're going to have a look at the carbohydrate content. And God said, behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed. What's a herb-bearing seed? A herb-bearing seed is a grain. A herb-bearing seed is a legume or a bean. A herb-bearing seed is a seed. So what are the grains? Wheat, millet, quinoa, rye, barley, millet, so many different. And these grains are high in protein, but they are also high in carbohydrate. How many on our carbohydrate list are from grain? Grain, grain, and we can do about 10 ticks there. Grain, 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 grain. So the majority of the foods on our carbohydrate list are from the grain section. Legume, chickpea, lima bean, black-eyed bean, cannelloni beans, kidney beans, lentils, high in protein, but medium to low in carbohydrate. That's the good news. In fact, the legume is only about a third the carbohydrate that you will find in the grain. Seeds. Pumpkin seed, sesame seed, sunflower seed, chia seed, flax seed, high in protein, low in carbohydrate. So God said, behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree, and the which of the trees a fruit-bearing seed. So what's a fruit-bearing seed? That's your nut. And we have so many nuts: macadamia, cashew, pecan, walnut, almond, Brazil, hazelnut, cashew, high in protein, low in carbohydrate. And the last thing God said in that verse is, the seed to you it shall be for meat. Now meat, the Bible, when it talks about meat, it's talking about the main substance of your diet. When it talks about animal protein, it talks about it as flesh. So the meat is the main substance. Interesting to note that all of these are high in fiber, generous proteins, and especially the nuts and seeds come with great fats. So they contain the three essential food groups. So to maintain and to ensure we're getting enough essentials, we should increase the legume, nut, seed part of our meals and decrease the grain part of the meal. And we find with diabetics, the blood glucose levels are balancing out within 48 hours. And we're finding incredible weight loss on a food program that is high fiber, generous proteins, great fats, and low carbohydrate. You possibly heard of the keto diet or the ketogenic diet. That's another diet that is very similar to this. And it was developed in about 1920s to help with epilepsy. So it's got over 100 years of experience showing how the ketogenic diet helps to manage epilepsy. And what Dr. Atkins found, that his epileptic patients were reducing their medication on his diet. His book was number one on the New York Times best-selling list 4 years running. That's why his diet demands a look. And in the 90s, I used to give a meeting called Dr. Atkins' Missing Link. And Dr. Atkins' missing link was the plant-based diet, because his science was correct. I don't advocate meat because it's hard to find a safe meat today. The way the animals are grown, the way the animals are killed, the dogs can get away with it because their gastrointestinal tract is 1 yard long. Ours is 10 yards long. And when that meat starts to break down, it putrefies. It's not a healthy remnant that it gives. Yes, there are people who are claiming to go very well on the carnivore diet. but I think that if a person is eating a high carbohydrate diet and they go over to a carnivore diet, they'll get results purely because they've had a big drop in the carbohydrates. But meat has a very acid response on the body, so it is a big contributing factor to conditions like arthritis, gout, and even contributing to cancer, as we will see tomorrow night. So what I'd like to look at now is the Sustain Me principles in conquering diabetes and also managing weight. So what's sunshine got to do with it? Well, the ultraviolet rays from the sun hit a form of cholesterol just under the skin. There's that other very important lipid in the body. It's called cholesterol. We need it. What the body does is it converts that to vitamin D. And vitamin D is essential in the proper running of the human body, in the healing of the human body. And vitamin D is essential not just for the absorption of calcium, but all the minerals in our body. Use of water. A lot of people don't realize that the hunger pang that most of us experience between meals is actually not hunger, it's thirst. The body often doesn't know the difference between hunger and thirst. And there are three foods that keep the food in the stomach longer, and that is fiber, protein, and fat. And I think it's Friday, right at the end of the week, we're going to go on a journey through our gastrointestinal tract. It's a fascinating journey. And you will see that these are the three food groups that keep the food in the stomach longer. When a person's on a high carbohydrate diet, then the food goes through a lot quicker and the person always feels hungry. See, the feeling of satisfaction or satiation comes from protein and fat. And on this high carbohydrate diet, often missing out on the protein and fat, the person's always hungry. Because they don't get that feeling of satisfaction or satiation. So the best thing to drink between meals is water. So my son Peter came to me one day, he was about 15, because I always say to the kids if they're hungry between the meals, I say, have a drink of water, have a drink of water. One day he came to me about 1:30, he said, Mum, the water's not doing it anymore. And I looked at my watch and I said, great, Pete, it's lunchtime. And that's when you find when the water's not doing it anymore, it's usually lunchtime. We need to be having at least eight ounce glasses a day. See, we lose more than that in a day. We lose about 10 glasses a day. But eight is enough because we can get the other through our fruits and vegetables, maybe a vegetable juice or herb tea. If we don't have eight glasses of water a day, the body tends to store and the person can put on weight. And also, these two hormones that the pancreas makes, glucagon and insulin, to balance blood glucose levels, if we're not drinking enough water, then there's going to be a compromise in the production of our main hormones. So for weight loss and conquering diabetes, water is essential. The best way to do it is to start early. Take a glass of water to bed with you. Have it next to your bed. So the first thing you do when you wake up is have water, because that's the most dehydrating time of the whole day is when you wake up in the morning. The more water you drink, the more, yes, you will urinate, but the more salt you lose. So it's also important to take a little of the whole salt. What's whole salt? Whole salt is salt as God designed us to have. The Celtic salt and the Baja salt are two hand-harvested salts that have 82 minerals in it, very similar to seawater. We're going to explore the salt issue in more detail tomorrow when we look at the heart. So water's essential for the balancing of the blood glucose levels and also for weight loss. Sleep. Let me give you God's perfect mathematical formula. 8 hours to work, 8 hours to play, 8 hours to sleep. And there's a whole lot of processes that happen while we sleep. And in my book, Sustain Me, I have a whole chapter on sleep, and I go into detail in all the processes that happen while we sleep, especially the early hours of the night. What are early hours of the night? We should be getting at least 2 hours before midnight, because 2 hours before midnight, so we really should try not to go to bed later than 10 and get those hours before midnight. That's when healing is accelerating. So if you have diabetes and want that pancreas to heal, you got to grab those, at least those 2 hours before midnight. See, the hormone that's released between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. is melatonin. It's called the fix and rejuvenate nighttime hormone. And that is the hormone responsible for increasing healing in those hours. So sleep, just in case you forget, 8. I always thought 7 was God's perfect number, but I'm starting to think I think he likes 8 too. Trust. Trust in divine power. We live an incredible body with an inbuilt ability to heal itself when given the right conditions. It's like the lady that said to me, I can't sleep, I can't sleep, I can't sleep. I said, don't say that anymore. She said, why not? I said, because the more you say it, the body goes, looks like we can't sleep. She said, so what'll I say? I'm going to try. I'm going to try. And there's much research today showing that when we picture a healed pancreas, might be a good idea to Google or get your anatomy and physiology book and look at a pancreas. And then as you go to sleep, picture it healing and reviving. In the book, The Brain That Changes Itself, Dr. Norman Doidge, incredible book, many stories of people who were told they'd never walk, they'd never use their arms, and guess what? They did. What's the old saying? Where there's a will, there's a way. But what they showed in this book, a man had had a stroke and he'd lost the use of his right arm, and they connected him with electrodes and they said, okay, move your arm. He tried, he couldn't, and he said, I can't move my arm. And when he said that, the nerve supply to that arm was blocked, all because that's what he said. So they said, well, we want you to say something else. We want you to say, I'm going to move this arm. It's going to move. So I give the story of my daughter Emma when she was 5. She said, Mum, I'm going to grow up in a minute. That was great faith, wasn't it? Great trust, because it took her another 10 years to grow up. So we can say, I'm going to move this arm in a minute. And it might take you a little while, but just the fact that you think it and you say it actually starts the action. And one of the best things you can do, if it can't move, you get your other arm and you help it. And just the movement starts, awakens those brain cells. We have an incredible body. So trusting in God, trusting that he gave us a body that will heal. And just remember my daughter Emma, I'm going to grow up in a minute, we're going to get better in a minute. It's faith. You see, God's system of healing is based on faith. And Hebrews 11 verse 1, the Bible says, faith is the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things not seen. If you can see it, it's not faith. So God's system is based on faith. I'm not there yet, but I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there. So just having that faith in your body's ability to heal is part of the journey to get there. And John Gabriel, in his book, The Gabriel Method, I have to tell you, kilos, I guess pounds is about double kilos. So he was 180 kilos, so that'd be nearly 400 pounds, big man. He was like this, there's photos of him. And little by little, he got that weight down, and there's a photo of him after 2 years, and he looks like he's got the body of a 20-year-old. You could count his abs. How did he get from this to this? He basically went through these Sustain Me principles, and I'll touch on some of them as we go through it. Now, one of the things he did was he pictured his new body. Now, you can't lay in bed and do nothing and picture your new body. Sorry, no. It's part of it. It's part of it. It's like someone can be doing everything right, and if they continually say, I'm never going to lose this weight, I'm never going to lose this weight, you know what the body says? Looks like we're never going to lose this weight. Your cells are very obedient to the mind, but there are some things that must stop. If you want to lose weight, if you want to conquer diabetes, and most people don't realise that caffeine is a dangerous substance to the body. We've got a book in our library called Caffeine Blues by a man named Kochansky, and his other title to the book is Wake Up to the Hidden Dangers of America's Number One Drug. What's a drug? Highly addictive. People say to me, do you drink coffee? I say, no, I just watch the people suffer day one at our health retreat. Ooh. Do you know, coffee drinkers suffer more than the heroin addict, than the methamphetamine addict, than the alcoholic, than the smoker? Now, they recover quicker. They recover much quicker. But talk about short-term suffering, that they take the prize. If someone wanted to conquer New York, you know, they just have to stop the coffee. The nation would be crippled. Now, how it affects diabetes is that when you have a cup of coffee, it mimics a crisis response in the body. And that crisis response means that insulin's released to get more glucose into the cell because you're about to do the run or the climb or the fight of your life. And so what caffeine does is it overstimulates the pancreas, just as refined sugar does, just as some other substances do. And most people don't realise the role that caffeine plays in diabetes. Now, if you're a coffee drinker, please don't stop or you won't be able to come to class tomorrow. If you're a coffee drinker, just start reducing. If you have 3 cups of coffee a day, start having 3 half cups. And then the next day, have 3/3 cups. Then the next day, 3/4 cups. And you can get off without pain and suffering. When I was in Texas a couple of weeks ago, every time I mentioned coffee, there was this groan. Oh, no. Here she goes again. We call it Australia's darling. I think it's America's darling too, isn't it? But you know, not only that, it also disrupts the neurotransmitters in the brain, so it's a contributing factor to some of the mental illnesses that we're seeing. So yes, the coffee must stop, the refined sugar must stop. There's no doubt about it. There was no diabetes on the planet till sugar was refined. And the little book, Sugar Blues, it's called Sugar Blues by William Dufty. He gives the history of sugar, and he shows exactly when diabetes first appeared is when sugar started to be refined. So there's no doubt about that, because it gets the blood sugar level up very high very fast, and when it goes very high very fast, then insulin has to be released, and then it goes too low. And when it goes too low, then the pancreas is told, stop the insulin, release the glucagon. But actually, when the person's down there, what do they usually do? Have another lot of sugar, have coffee with 3 teaspoons of sugar, have a candy. Does that get it up? Oh, yes. Now it's too high. Oh, no, it's too high. Stop the glucagon, release the insulin. Bang. Oh, no, it's too... Can you see this constant whiplash? This is just wearing pancreases out. But something else happens before the pancreas wears out. Insulin resistance happens in the cell. It's as if the cell says, I'm sick of the sight of you. And so the glucose can't get into the cell, so the blood glucose levels remain high. So the brain says to the pancreas, more insulin, more insulin. It's just, this vicious cycle. No wonder pancreases wear out. I'm against child abuse, I'm against animal abuse, and I'm against pancreatic abuse. And what many people they don't even know or realize that they're beating up their pancreas. And I tell you, it bears long under the abuse before it finally just, enough. So when this insulin resistance happens at the cell wall, the glucose is still in the blood. There's only one thing it can do, and that's spill out into the urine. Diabetes mellitus means sweet urine, sugar in the urine, because it can't get in the cell because there's either no insulin or there's insulin resistance setting up there. But something else is happening. Something else is happening today, because I know in Australia, 500 new diabetics are being diagnosed every day. Why? Why has there been this explosion in diabetes? You might be surprised and you might not be surprised. It's actually got a lot to do with the grain that the majority of cereals, breads, the cakes and all the rest of them, pizza and pasta. What grain are they made out of? Wheat. And in the 1950s, wheat was hybridized. It was put through intensive crossbreeding to produce a plant with a high yield of grain. You see, they did it to help with the starvation crisis in Africa, in India, in Mexico. And so they finally came up. In fact, 1976, Dr. Norman Boulay got a Nobel Prize for his hybridized wheat. Have you noticed it only grows that high? When I was a little girl, it used to grow this high. You see, it has to grow that high because it has such a heavy yield of grain. So they had to make a thick stem, a short plant, to hold that heavy yield of grain. In fact, some plants are giving 6 to 8 times more grain. That's 6 to 8 times more grain per acre. That's 6 to 8 times more money per acre. So no wonder the farmers loved it. So by the 1990s, every cereal, bread, cake, etc., pizza, pasta, is made out of the hybridized wheat. They rushed it through with no safety studies. Sound familiar? Rushed it through with no safety studies because they didn't think they had to do safety studies on wheat. But only now are they starting to reveal the problems it's causing. And one is diabetes. Why? Well, the hybridization of the wheat created a starch structure called amylopectin A. Amylopectin A is the name of the starch that was created in the hybridization of the wheat. So let me show you where it sits on our blood sugar levels. Let's say that's normal. Amylopectin A goes up very high, very fast, and then we've got this corresponding dump. That's the A. Let me give you something to compare it to. Amylopectin B is found in bananas and potatoes, and if you are familiar with the glycemic index of foods, bananas and potatoes get the blood sugar level up relatively high, relatively fast. Not as high, not as fast, not as low. That's the B. Amylopectin C is the starch found in legumes, so lentils, chickpeas, lima beans, black-eyed beans, cannelloni beans. That gives a lovely steady rise, lovely steady maintenance drop. There's your C. In fact, I met a man 10 years ago. He said, I'm in my 60s. When I was in my 40s, I was diagnosed with pre-diabetes, and I was told to eat beans every day because beans, the legumes, give a lovely, steady, sure delivery of fuel. He said, I did it and I never developed diabetes. I said, well done. What is the glycemic index of food? The glycemic index of food is how quickly the glucose in that food is released into the blood. So glycemic index baseline sits at 55. So anything above 55 is considered high GI. Anything under is low GI. So all your berries, cherries, blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, boysenberries, raspberries, they all sit at 25. Actually, sorry, 26. They're 26. So they're great fruits for the diabetic. They're great fruits for the person wanting to lose weight. Grapefruit. I had a magnificent grapefruit this morning. I hear they're in season. Sits at 25. That's your 25. That's not a surprise, is it? Because it's not a real sweet fruit. So where does sugar sit? Sugar sits at 59. Now that's not a surprise, whether it be white or tan or brown. White. White bread, white cereal, so let's say white wheat, refined wheat, sits at 69. So your white bread gets it up even higher than like a candy? Why? It's because of the amylopectin A. I'm glad you're sitting down because the next information is shocking. Shocking. Whole wheat. So whole wheat, where does it sit? 72. How could that be? Well, because it's not refined, it has more amylopectin A in it. And it's the amylopectin A that gets that blood sugar level rise. And what are diabetics told? Whole wheat bread, whole wheat pasta. I had one lady start crying when she heard this. I said, "Why are you crying?" She said, "I'm 69. I was diagnosed at the age of 65. I had to do everything they told me. I have whole wheat bread, whole wheat pasta, whole wheat, whole wheat, whole wheat. And every 6 months I go to the doctor and he puts me on more insulin." And what's the definition of insanity? To do what you've always done and expect different results. She said, "I've been so frustrated and you have just solved the puzzle." Now, if you want to explore that in more detail, the book Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis, he gives a great explanation of the history of wheat and what have they done to it. One man wrote to me and he said, "Barbara, you're wrong on the wheat. Jesus said that he was the bread of life." I said, "He is the bread of life, but he's not referring to the bread we have today." No, no, no. And God made the wheat perfect. Sorry, man's mucked it up. Can you get a wheat that has not been hybridized? They often call them ancient grains. So spelt, Enkenhorn, Kamut, they are all field or wild hybrids from the original wheat. So if someone wants to lose weight, and if someone wants to conquer their diabetes, yes, the refined sugar must stop. In fact, if someone has diabetes, even sugars like maple syrup and honey must stop until you have a happy pancreas. And we've seen many people regain happy pancreases. But the other thing that must stop is the wheat because of its disastrous effect on the blood sugar levels. Alcohol must stop. Anything that is damaging to the body, we've got to get the chemicals out of our homes. Inhale. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, the Bible says, "God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. He became a living soul." Did everyone hear that? This is not mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Where did God breathe? Into the nostrils. And when you look at the science of breathing, you will discover that nose purifies the air, nose warms the air, nose humidifies the air, nose balances blood gases, and nose also pressurizes the air, making it perfect for the lungs. Yes, we should breathe in and out through our nose. You'll get better at it. And if you're not sure what you're doing in the night, there's an easy way to determine. It's called mouth tape. Yep, you won't die. You won't die. You don't have to do what my little 8-year-old granddaughter did. She was staying at me last year in the holidays. She said, "Nana, I've got a cold. I need to tape my mouth up." She said, "Just give me masking tape." I said, "Righto." He laid down in bed with his big smile, went to sleep with her mouth taped up. She's my son's daughter. But you know what she's discovered? It's the best way to keep the nose clear, to tape the mouth up. So you can do it in the civilized way. You can tape your mouth up for an hour a day by putting some paper tape from underneath the nose to the chin. You do it for an hour a day, and after a week you could sleep with that on. That's the civilized way to do it. Do you know sleep apnea would greatly reduce? Snoring would greatly reduce by mouth taping. You can even buy special tape today for the mouth. So inhale through the nose, because when you inhale through the nose, you get 18% more oxygen in the cell. And if you're getting more oxygen in the cell, whew, look at the energy that you will get. N is nutrition. So as we've looked at in nutrition, ideally we should be eating high fiber, generous protein, great fats. The more you want to seriously balance your blood glucose levels and lose weight, the less carbs that you'll eat. Carbs are not bad. My husband would never forgive me if the potatoes stopped. Either would Ricky, wherever he is. He's an Englishman. They love their potatoes. See, the carbs aren't bad. It's just when they're overdone and refined, and that's what we're doing. That's what we're seeing today. So yes, have some carbs every meal, but don't make it your main meal. Don't make it the main part of your meal. And because it's the non-essential, that's the part you negotiate with. And you will find that high fiber, generous protein and great fats will balance those blood glucose levels so much better, because they give a steady, sure delivery of fuel. And we have seen it again and again. A common email we get 6 weeks after attending our retreat, where they learn the Sustain Me principles and the way to eat, 10 kilo, 20 pound loss in 6 weeks. And they're very, very happy with that. You know what they say to us? It's like we're not even on a diet. So what would be a great breakfast? A great breakfast would be fruit. Low glycemic fruit. Maybe you can get some delicious grapefruit like we did. They're in season at the moment. If you don't like grapefruit, go for your berries, but low GI fruits, some seeds and nuts with that. And a great low glycemic breakfast is the Simple Needs Bread. Are you familiar with the Simple Needs Bread? The Simple Needs Bread can be ordered online, or there are lots of shops that sell it now. And Simple Needs Bread is a bread that is gluten-free, and I have never tasted a gluten-free bread as good as this. And it'll keep 6 weeks in the fridge. It might feel a little hard after a week or two, but you put it in the toaster and it becomes light and fluffy again. So Simple Needs Bread with avocado on top and maybe scrambled tofu, make sure it's organic. Or on top of that, you might have some savory red lentils. That breakfast is high in fiber, generous proteins, great fats, low carbohydrates. That's an easy one. Some people choose to have a smoothie for breakfast. Make sure your smoothie has fiber, maybe all your berries, maybe throw an avocado in, protein. Put chia seed in, put some flaxseed in. Some people will put some protein powder in. You can get some great hemp protein or organic soy. Or we use pea protein at our retreat. And the great fats, put some coconut milk in there. Makes it taste nice. And also you've got a great fat in there, because the body loves burning saturated fat as fuel. It's like the Australian farmer. He wanted to fatten up his cows and he got coconuts cheap. See, right up the top of Australia, it's more tropical. So he got these coconuts, broke them open, fed them to his cows. Remember what he did it for? To fatten up his cows? Because he believed the rhetoric that coconut is a saturated fat and it'll make you fat. Well, his cows lost fat, put on muscle, and started bounding around the paddock. I think you call it a field, is that right? So if you want to lose fat, put on muscle, and bound around the paddock, what do you eat? Coconut. So what's a good lunch? A good lunch would be salad, lots of salad, everything you love. And if you're not fussed on salad, you can make some beautiful dressings. We do olive oil and lemon juice, crushed garlic, salt. And then if you mix with a fork or with a blender, tahini makes it nice and creamy. And then you might have baked sweet potato. Sweet potato is quite low on the glycemic index. Can you have potato? Just don't have a whole plate full, maybe one. And then have protein. So protein might be something with organic tofu. It might be something with your beans, chickpeas, lima beans, black-eyed beans. There's so many different types of beans. In the back of my book, Self-Heal by Design, I have recipes for legumes because that's one area I found a lot of people don't know how to make legumes taste fantastic. God gave us taste buds for a reason. Food should be phenomenal. Should taste very, very good. Moderation. Moderation in all the good things. Yes, you can have potatoes, just don't have a whole plate full. Yes, you can have some carbs, but have them in moderation, small amounts. Moderation also when you eat. Now, what the research is showing today, that diabetics go best on time-restricted eating. Time-restricted eating came out of the 5-2 diet or the intermittent fasting. It's eating twice, 6 hours apart in a 24-hour period. Now, what have diabetics been told for the last 30 years? You've got to eat every 2 hours. Now, notice they don't say, sorry, we got it wrong. No, what they say is, new research reveals. new research? What's the old saying? We should be eating breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, supper like a pauper. That's the saying that's been going around for the last, 500 years? It's not new. It's not new. But what they're finding with this time-restricted eating, that diabetics are managing their blood glucose levels better. And the only way you can do that is to have high fiber, generous protein and great fats, because remember, they're the foods that are going to give steady, consistent delivery of fuel. Now, we've been doing that at our health retreats for the last 25 years. Now, the reason we're doing it is I got it out of that little book, The Ministry of Healing, where the author says, breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and supper like a pauper. One lady said, what do paupers eat? I said, sometimes nothing. So let me give you the story of a guy that came to our program. His name was Dan. He was 19, and he got diabetes at the age of 15. And he got it after taking a double course of very strong antibiotics because he had a bad chest cold. And the doctor told him that the antibiotics had killed off the beta cells in his pancreas that create insulin. And the doctor told him his pancreas was dead. Do you know, if ever you're told that, reject that one. I said to him, is your pancreas gangrene? What's dead? You can't have part dead, nearly dead. You're either dead or alive. And I said, if there's blood going through that pancreas is alive. So if ever you're told your pancreas is dead, you know what you say? Thank you so much for your opinion. Because it's not necessarily so. And if you picture a dead pancreas, guess what? The pancreas will live up to your expectations. And if you picture a live pancreas that's going to get better in a minute, that's going to grow up in a minute, then just the very thought of it is going to contribute to life returning. At the same time, giving it all the right conditions. So Dan was on 90 units of insulin a day, and he was told he had type 1 diabetes. Now, the first three nights, he told me this later, he'd get a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night, so he'd take a candy. Now, that would get it up very quick, very fast, to the point that he'd get a headache. But that's what he was told to do. And why was he getting a low? He was getting a low because he was on too much insulin. The insulin, the 90 units of insulin a day, was allowing him to eat this. And that's what he was living on. So he came to our retreat, and we don't give that food. After three nights, he was feeling a little guilty. So he started to eat an apple in the middle of the night. Now, it takes a long time to eat an apple in the middle of the night. But it did get his blood sugar level up. Third night, his third option, which he started to do after about 10 days, a week and a half. He was with us for 4 weeks. If he got a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night, he would jump down on the floor and do push-ups, 30 push-ups. That would get it up. Where'd that come from? His glycogen stores, his fat stores, already sitting there waiting to be called on. In fact, after 2 weeks, he said, "Why hasn't anyone told me about glycogen?" Remember, it's in the muscle, it's used by the muscle. Remember, it's in the liver, it'll go everywhere. And if that runs out, we've got some basement stores, it's called fat cells. I'm not sure on your American readings, so I'm going to give you Australian. Blood sugar levels should sit between 5 and 6. He got up one morning and his blood sugar level was 3. That's almost passing out. So he had a glass of water with some salt, got dressed, put his shoes on, had another glass of water with salt, and went for a run up and down the hills, came back, took his blood glucose levels. They were 9. And he'd had nothing to eat. Where'd that come from? His glycogen stores in his muscle cell and also in his liver that need water to liberate them or free them as you're moving that body. After 3 weeks, Dan was taking 10 units of insulin a day. He went from 90 units of insulin a day down to 10 in 3 weeks. But in 48 hours, we were starting to see it balancing down. That's why he's having blood sugar level lows, because he was still actually on too much insulin. He went home a very happy young man. Was his pancreas dead? Not at all. Not for him to be able to reduce his insulin. That showed very clearly. And what he was doing to his pancreas was causing this. A happy pancreas. He was giving the pancreas a break. And notice how he got his blood sugar levels up again. Exercise. Doug McGough, he wrote a book called Body by Science. He was asked the question, what's the most important, exercise or food? He said food. And yet he's an exercise guy. He said, you can't exercise your way out of a bad diet. In fact, it's a little bit of all this. It's not just one. It's all of it. All of it come together. And we've seen again and again and again, people conquer weight loss, or people conquer weight gain by experiencing weight loss, but also people conquering their diabetes. I give you the story of Dan, who was a type 1 diabetic, because type 2 is much easier. Type 1, they are told their pancreas, the beta cells, aren't making insulin anymore, and that's what Dan had been told, but hey, they revived. I can never predict what's going to happen. But as you can see, these simple lifestyle changes can have a dramatic result on the body. But just remember Emma, who had great faith when she said, I'm going to grow up in a minute. How long will it take? I do not know. But you've got nothing to lose when you do this. Now, if you have a job where you have to have breakfast at 6:30 in the morning, you will need to eat at 12:30, and you possibly need to eat again at 6:30. So the time-restricted diet does not work with everyone. But what they have found is that many people go well on a 9 o'clock breakfast, a 3 o'clock, another main meal. A lot of retirees are doing that. I've seen retirees come alive by eating like this, starting to exercise more. I've even seen retirees book themselves out of the aged care facility, getting a new lease on life. Life should be good. It should be good right now, and it can be, once these simple principles are introduced. One lady said, I go to bed at midnight every night. So what she did, we started to go to bed at 11:30. After a week, she went to bed at 11. After another week, she went to bed at 10:30. Can you see what she did? She eased her way into it. As with many coming off caffeine, easing off. If someone says, how can we prepare for a week at Misty Mountain? The first thing I say is start reducing the coffee. start reducing the coffee. And so as you can see, we live in an incredible body with an inbuilt ability to heal itself when you give it the right conditions. It's time for a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a look at DNA and the true cause of disease. Thank you.